rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Marana, and the respected listeners. Very excited for episode number 2 of the Power Hour. So listeners, this is, as Marana mentioned, the first of Rabiul Awwal. It's actually the first week into spring, and things are taking shape. And the second episode of the Power Hour, remember my vision, my mission for you, as I discussed last week, is to empower, inspire, and motivate you, whether you are a learner, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a parent, or you're just somebody who's looking to improve on your skills, because we're going to cover a lot of skills and skill development. So yes, today we're covering a little bit of learning and teaching, and then I'm actually going to start with the segment on parenting. I call it the parenting power. And the last part I'm going to talk about is high performance habits. What makes high performers perform at the level that they are at? And I'm going to cover two very important things about high performance. So let's get into the show. Parenting power. And this is something that, you know, a real challenge. You know, something very interesting on one of the other radio shows when I had a show, a listener called in and said, you know, you guys like to speak about parenting, and there's a lot of speakers like speaking about parenting. Do you have children of your own? So yes, I do have children of mine. And alhamdulillah, bless me, I have 4 kids, you know, ranging from 26 years old right down to like 5 years old. So alhamdulillah, you know, apart from having children of my own, I've been very blessed to have worked with over 140,000, young people and over 10,000 parents. So yes, I am, you know, suitable to talk to you about my experiences and what I can, you know, tell you about the behaviors and the trends and the pattern of where it's heading. So let's begin with parenting power. And the thing I'd like to begin with is to actually, you know, tell you as parents, those of you that are parents, how is your child, this is not just your child, how anybody's identity or character is shaped. You see, as you're growing up, you develop an identity and you actually start building your character. Now, there are 4 key areas that actually shape that character, that shape the identity of who you become. The first part of, you know, shaping your character is the first, I'd say, the first 5, 6 to 7, sometimes up to 8 years of a child's life is shaped by the parents, okay? And I call this part the parent trap. And I'll tell you why I call it the parent trap. We're going to cover 6 areas of big mistakes that parents make. The second area that shapes identity or character of somebody is, you know, when they come like 8, 9, when they go to school, nowadays with their friends. So I call this the peer pit, because sometimes now, especially more than ever, we have more followers than leaders. So the second part that shapes somebody's identity is basically your peers, who you hang out with, who are you spending your time with, where are you spending your time, you know, with what type of people, because what happens is, the kind of people you spend your time with, you become like them. You start speaking like them. Like, if you've noticed, right now, there's a huge phenomenon with teenagers, a lot of teens and even parents, mothers, they watching a lot of these series and stuff. They're so caught up in it. They become like these people. Whatever they're watching, how they're dressing, how they're eating, what they're becoming like them. So that's the pit, because you fall in that pit. The third part that shapes character and identity is what I call the leader's lair. And this is basically anybody in a position of authority, whether it's, you know, elders in the family, grandparents, uncles, whether it's a teacher, whether it's an ustad, whether it's an alim, you know, all of these people are in positions of leadership or positions of authority. So what happens is, whatever is told to you at that stage in your life by anybody in a position of authority, generally the subconscious mind believes it as the gospel truth, especially when you are a young little child growing up. And the last part that shapes character and identity, who you become and the kind of identity you carry, is the media, right? This is all types of media, whether it's social media, whether it's print media, you're reading the newspapers, the magazines, what you're listening to, what you're watching, all of this falls under media. And the media is shaping minds like you cannot believe. I actually studied mind control, many, many years ago. And it's fascinating how they use the media to manipulate and control minds. So let's go into the first part, which I was, you know, going to talk about and spend my time is, you know, the parent trap of how you are shaping your child's identity. Now, the first biggest trap that we ever fall in is the cycle of negativity. In South Africa, it's very frightening. A child hears 37 negatives before they hear one positive. This means they're always hearing things like, no, don't do that, don't go there, don't touch, don't come late, don't forget to do your homework, don't drop your don't, no. If I tell you all, listeners, don't think of a pink elephant, what happens to us? We think of a pink elephant. So what does this teach us? This tells us that the human mind on a subconscious level cannot process anything negative. It processes everything in the positive. So when you tell your child, don't trouble your brother, they process trouble the brother. When you tell the child, you know what, don't come late or don't make noise, they might be processing make noise, come late. So we need to move away from the cycle of negativity because, like I said, if you, you know, put this into better numbers, right? 37 negatives. That means in every 111 things a child is hearing, 108 are negative things and only 3 are positive things, right? So this means that children are growing up becoming very negatively conditioned. They know exactly what they don't want. They'll tell you, I don't want to fail. I don't want to do badly. You know, then when you ask them, what do you want, right? And then they go, no, what do you mean, what do you want? I don't want to, no, nobody wants to fail. Nobody wants to do badly. What exactly do you, then very rarely do we know what exactly it is that we do want because we know what we don't want. So the first trap we need to come out of as parents is the cycle of negativity. We need to speak more positively using more positive words as well. The second very big trap that we fall in is the trap of tough love. Now, what is the trap of tough love? You know, if you think about it, growing up, we grew up tough times, difficult times, challenging times. So what happened was whenever, you know, it's very strange when you talk about the tough love. What is tough love? And I'll come back to what I was saying. So if I were to ask all of you listeners to go on a journey, you know, down memory lane and think about when you were a, you know, maybe 18, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, how many times in your life did your father or mother come and hold you, hug you, told you, son, daughter, I love you for no reason? Don't count janazas, don't count Eid, don't count, you know, how many times for no reason? Not because you brought a good report card or you did something. How many times did they do it for absolutely no reason? And most people will shake their head and they're probably smiling, and it never happened. You know why? We grew up in a cycle called tough love. Our parents will tell us, hey, I gave you clothes to wear. I gave you food to eat. I put a roof over your head. I sent you to school. And for them, that was love, you know. And we turned out okay. But this generation, especially Generation Alpha, Generation X, Y, and Z, these youngsters of today, if they don't get the actual, you know, hug and love, I love you in a day, they don't turn out okay. Right. So the statistic says a child growing up in South Africa requires 7 hugs and I love yous a day to grow up with normal and good self-esteem and self-confidence. Now, you do the math to see what your status and where you are like, and it might be very strange to now start inculcating this. So if we take a step back and think about it, now with this need of we call this the need for significance, the need to feel special and the need to feel important. This generation is driven by this need to feel significant. This is why we have a rise in bullying. Bullying makes them feel important, makes them feel special. They get attention, you see. So if you think about it, this is a basic human need to feel special and to feel important. But what we need to do is we have to break the cycle. And at first, it's going to be very, very difficult because, you know, to give a hug for no reason, it's very, very difficult. I know the first time I went to hug my mother, you know, when I hugged her and I held her, there was a big gap. And she's like, what did you do now? I'm like, no, you know, I just want to tell you I love you. And it's very hard. So it's a very difficult cycle to break. We need to give these children unconditional love, and we need to hug them and tell them we love them every single day because they need it, right? It's not us. It's the science that's telling us how much they need it. But here's the biggest part about this is when they don't get it at home, seek it outside. The need gets fulfilled somewhere else. So very often what happens is students, when they go to school, the first thing they do when they see their friends, they will hug them. Hi, assalamu alaikum. Then hug them. Why? The need was not met at home, so they find the need gets met outside of the home. So that's the second big, trap that parents need to come out of, and we need to now start giving them those hugs. They need it more than ever, because like I said, when they don't get it, they're growing up, lacking self-esteem and self-confidence. So the third big trap that most parents are falling into right now in 2024 is they want to tell their children what to do. Now, it worked back in the day, 20, 30 years ago, when our parents told us, we shut our mouth and we did it, right? We were scared because we get back, right? But nowadays, if you tell a child what to do, they'll ask you why. Why not this way? Why not that? They'll ask you 1,000 questions before it actually gets done. So what can we do to avoid that? So instead of telling them what to do, right, this generation needs different skill sets. We need to teach them how to make good choices and decisions. Decision making, very, very important skill in life, especially for youngsters, but for everybody. We need to have good decision making skills. We need to make choices. Now, why is this important? You see, right now, more than ever, a child is young people are being bombarded from all sides. Now, if we're going to tell them what to do, when we are not there, they're not going to bother, and they'll do what they want. So instead of, like, for example, if somebody tells the child, hey, let's bunk school today, let's not go to class, at that moment, they're going to make a choice. If somebody tells them, yeah, have a puff of a cigarette, at that moment, they have to make a choice whether they, do this and follow the peers, or they say, hey, listen, this is not for me, I don't want to do that. They have to make a choice, and you're not there as a parent. So instead of telling them what to do, teach them how to make good choices. And also we need to teach them that choices have consequences. You do something, there's going to be a consequence. It might be a good thing, it might be a bad thing, but there are consequences, and you're responsible for the consequences of your choices. You need to be responsible. Okay? So we now need to have, give them better skills, which is the skill of decision-making and making good choices. It's a very, very important skill that actually needs to be instilled. We need to stop telling them what to do. They need to think for themselves. So when they are now, in a situation where they have to make a choice, you as a parent are not there, they make good choices and they make good decisions. The next big trap that most parents fall into, and this is a major one, is a comparison. When you compare your child to somebody else, especially this happens a lot, when you're comparing your child, like matrix are writing, their child right now, they're busy with that. So when a parent says, that's your cousin also doing matrix, she's doing so well, now you're comparing the child, okay? And a comparison is the biggest trap to killing self-esteem, right? It's the biggest thing that destroys self-esteem in young people is when you compare them. Now, we don't know. Remember, parents, this trap is not only confined to you comparing them to another student or a cousin. Sometimes you might compare them. Your brother does so well. Your brother does. You're comparing them to a sibling. Or what? The worst one is when a parent says, when I was your age, I did it. Now you're comparing them to you. So we need to move away from comparing them to others or ourselves. How do we match this, or how do we manage this comparison? You need to actually, if you want to compare, you compare them to themselves. Okay, last time you were here, where are you now? Last week you were here, where are you now? Have you progressed? Have you regressed? What's the story? Are you moving forward? Are you, growing? Are you getting better? Or are you still in the same place? Or are you getting worse? Going backwards. So compare them to themselves, where they were last week, last month, last year, last 5 years, right? So we need to compare them to themselves. And the last big trap that we find a lot of parents have is having the fixed mindset. You know, there's two types of mindsets. One is called the growth mindset, and the other is called the fixed mindset. Like the fixed mindset says, you know, this is how things are, this is how it's always been, and this is how it's always going to be. That's a fixed mindset. But a growth mindset is where you say, okay, listen, I'm not too good in math, but maybe with a little bit of effort, we need to sit down every day, maybe, you know, do a sum together, do some building of skills, whether it's whatever skills in math, we need to sit down and do something. Means there's an effort, right? So a growth mindset means I will put a focused effort, a little bit of effort, and it helps me to grow and get better. The fixed mindset is where they say, no, this is how it's been. I've always been bad at math, and for the rest of my life, I'm going to be bad at math. And it doesn't help when the parent says, oh, darling, don't worry, I too was bad in math. No, it's not genetic. It's not hereditary, right? We need to put in an effort, and I always like to call it a focused effort, that you now can develop and grow and improve and become better. So those are the big traps that we need to move away from. Now, what is the solution to this? So you need to become a positive parent. And how do we go about becoming positive in our parenting? There's five C's. Last week, I spoke about the six P's when it comes to learning. Now it's the five C's of parenting, right? Of positive parenting. So the first C, listeners, very, very important, is you have to, as a family, have a core, right? What is this core? The core is basically, what are the values and principles that we live our life on? Remember, our baseline is Quran and Sunnah, Sharia, right? We are Muslim, so that is our baseline. All our values, all our principles need to be according to Sharia. So we need to have good guiding values and principles that we take from the deen and we apply it. It's no good, and you know, it's no use just talking about it and having it there, but not applying it in your life. So we have to have good values and good principles. And you know, for example, one of the very big things that a lot of people, you know, they just live life in family. They just live life day to day, week by week, month by, and they carry on. There's no direction. So what this is, it means now we need to align everybody to a common purpose, to a common way. So we all have the common values, right, of the family values. And you set out, what does it mean to be, you know, the surname of the family? What does it mean to others? How will we be remembered, right? What will we be remembered for? This forms the core of your parenting. The second key of actually powerful parenting is character development, akhlaq, right? Right now, we know morality is on a rapid decline and behaviors are at an all-time low. What we need to do is, remember, you need to build your child's character. Character building is very important. And we need to start at home. This is not the job of the teacher. This is not the job of the ustad or the apas, right? It's your job as a parent to develop character. Simple thing, you know, respect, speaking the truth, honor, all of these things build character. So you need, you know, there are 52 main character traits. If you start each week, right, one character trait, the whole week we talk about it, we read stories about it, and we discuss the character trait, and we immerse ourselves in it, meaning we do it, we become this character trait that we're talking about. It'll very quickly you start developing good character. And we've got the perfect role model to look at when it comes to akhlaq, character, and character building. Our beloved Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, that's the perfect role model. You don't need to look far. It's there, right in front of us. The problem is, we are too focused on other things, you know. We're looking at other characters as our role model. We need to now take back and develop character at home based on the sunnah of our beloved Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The third very important part of powerful parenting is communication, okay? Now, this could mean, you know, sitting down with your kids, speaking to them. It could also mean having a family meeting every week. You need to have a family meeting. It's a family meeting. Absolutely important to know what's going on in everybody's life. Okay, now I like to make these family meetings a form of communication to know what is going on, what are big things that happened in your week, is there anything coming up in the week ahead, are you going anywhere, do you need any assistance, anything, how you feeling, or, you know, what's going on in your life, is there anything you need? And these meetings generally should not be more than 20 minutes. Let it be fun, let somebody have, you know, be in charge of the meals. And parents, to make this more interesting, I always say, let one person, every single person in the family, be the amir of that meeting, right? It's a family meeting, no more than 20 minutes a week. Everybody says what they're doing. They might need help. Somebody's going here. Somebody needs a lift here. You know, I need to buy this. So we get to know what's going on in everybody's life. But what this inculcates indirectly is the concept of mashura. This is something that we've forgotten, right? The mashura is absolutely, it's a sunnah of the Muslim as well. It teaches us to discuss with others, right? So like I said, to make it interesting, make each of the child or each person in the family to be the leader, the amir of that meeting. And remember, the amir don't always have to make a decision based on what everybody else wants, okay? So we need to know the concept of mashura. But for now, let's just start with the communication. The third C in powerful parenting is about contribution, right? Contribution is basically now starting at home. How are you contributing to the well-being and the success of the family? This is not just you as a parent, but every single person. What is your contribution? Age-appropriate contribution. Some people in the modern terminology, they call it chores, right? I like to call it contribution. If you're doing a chore like this, just for example, you are washing the dishes. That is your contribution to the success of this family, okay? So we get contribution on different levels. So the first level is to contribute within the family, in the family, contribute in the family. Then the second level is now also, what am I doing to contribute to my community? What am I doing to contribute in my community to improve, give off, give, you know, give more? And the last level, the highest level is now contribution to the global ummah at large, right? So what am I doing to contribute to the ummah at large? What is my role? What do I do to contribute? So there's several things here. You know, sadaqah is a very important one. That's your contribution, giving out. You know, parents, we've become so complacent when it comes to contribution nowadays. We tend to outsource this to organizations. I say, teach your children from now to give zakat, to give sadaqah with their own hands. Go into the poor. Let them give from what they, you know, they have, their toys, their clothes, what they love. Let them give from that. That's contribution. So remember, like I said, contribution, three levels. Let's start in the house. What is your contribution in this home? Your contribution to success of this family, okay? Very, very important in power parenting. That was the one, two, three, four. The fourth C is about care and kindness, being very kind and loving, okay? This is, again, from the character of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. He loved and cared for even those that were, you know, that you know, the story of the Jewish lady who used to throw all the stones and dirt and thorns on the road. And when she got sick, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam went to visit her to see what she's doing. You know, that's care, that's love. So we got to operate from a position of love and care, no matter what others think, say, and do. If they're being bad to us, that doesn't mean we need to be bad to them. We need to be good because that's who we are. We don't need to stoop to their level. So we got to teach our children how to be more caring, how to be more, you know, loving. We care for those that are oppressed, those that are being, you know, subjected to oppression. You know, we always have to stand up for that, especially now in schools, the bullying and all of that. We need to teach our children how to care for those people and how to stand up for them. And the last C, the most powerful one, is continuity, legacy. What is your legacy? What is the family going to be remembered for? When we're all dead and gone, what will people remember us for? What is our family known for? Like, for example, in our family, we are known to be, you know, a lot of fun in my family. I was the very first happen. So we all, they know very often, oh, this bias, okay, a lot of Fufas in that family. So we known for one of the things that we are very well known for is a lot of Fufas, being good Fufas, right? So that's a legacy. It runs and it carries on for generation and generation. What are you going to do for your family legacy? How do you want to be remembered? What is it that you want to be remembered for? And these, like I said, not just talk about it, write it down and put it into practice. So the first C was building a core. The second C was character development. The third C was communication. The fourth C was contribution. The fifth C was about care and love. And the sixth C is all about continuity, legacy. What is the legacy that I want to leave behind? What do I want to be remembered for? And your Sawabajaria falls in this as well, you know? So how do you want to be remembered? Okay, so that's a little bit about the positive parenting to actually develop that character and that identity, right? Now, we got to look at some, you know, I call it the ABCs of parenting, right? And then I'll move on to learning. So when it comes to the ABCs of parenting, A stands for having attitude, the right attitude. We need to have a winning attitude, right? Very often, most parents, you know, attitude is a small thing, but has a huge, major impact. We spoke about this last week. So you want to have a winning attitude. You need to model a winning attitude, how you conduct yourself, how you talk, how you carry yourself. All of that is basically giving up. And those around you will actually learn what you're doing, not what you're saying. So A is for having the right attitude. B is for belief. We need to start believing in our children, right? Because very often, parents generally project their fears, their weaknesses onto their children. Like, for example, we here in Durban, Marana and I are in Durban, right? When people come to Durban to the beach and the children start running towards them, no, don't go there, buddy, you're going to drown, you know? So you projecting your fear onto them, obviously, yeah, we need to take precautions, but we cannot keep, you know, don't go there, hey, you're wrong, don't do that. It's really dangerous. We tend to project our fears. So we need to start believing in them and their capabilities that they will learn as they go along. C, you also need to just, with this belief, they call this the psychology, when you study psychology at university, you know, they call it the competency confidence loop. So C is about having confidence in yourself and in everybody else's ability. You need to believe in them, and you need to have confidence that they can do it, you know, to the best of their ability. So we need to instill confidence that, hey, we believe you can do it. Don't worry, you can do that. Get it done. Do it, right? So we need to show that we have confidence in their capability and their ability. Number four, the D in the ABCs of parenting, is to actually teach determination, grit, and resilience, not to give up. This generation likes to give up very quickly, right? So all I'm saying is, let's teach them a little bit about resilience, determination, perseverance, you know, persistence, to never, ever give up. No matter what it is that you're doing, to never give up after one, two, three attempts. We got to keep going until we accomplish and achieve what it is that we set out to achieve. And the E in the parenting advice is energize yourself. Become more energetic in how you speak, in our actions. Remember, this generation thrives on energy. Everywhere you look at them, they're bouncing off the wall. They move. They can't sit still. But if you look at baby boomers and the older generation, they were slower, spoke slower even, right? They did everything on a slower pace. This generation is full of energy. And when we mismatch them, go, I don't like him. So you want to match their levels of energy as well, not just in action. How you speak, right? How you communicate. In everything that you do, you want to bring about excitement and energy, right? So you remember these three things, right? Energy, excitement, and enthusiasm. Okay, so that's the parenting advice. And that was the parenting power that we covered now. We spoke about how character is shaped, positive parenting, building the core, character development, communication, contribution, care, and continuity. Now, I want to move to the next segment, which is about learning. And I mentioned this last week, and I'm going to mention it again. The two most powerful skills in the planet, in the world, is basically how to learn and how to teach. Now, this ability of learning is based on four very simple rules, right? It's four very simple rules. Number one is the purity of your intention. You've got to have a pure intention, and it must be positive. And, you know, we don't learn something to evil. So the purity of your intention is absolutely crucial. Number two is the focus of your will. It means my ability to focus, concentrate, pay attention to what's important, right? And what needed to move and learn, okay? The third level is called the level of awareness, right? In learning and teaching, we call this metacognition. I need to be aware of what I know and what I don't know. Now, this might sound very weird, right? But there are actually five levels. You can call them the five steps in learning. The first step in learning, or the first level of the five levels, is called unconscious incompetence. Unconscious incompetence means what I don't know, I don't know. For example, a little baby, when the baby is born, the baby doesn't know that the baby doesn't know how to walk and talk. The baby doesn't know that. It's only 1, 2 weeks old. It doesn't know that. But then as the baby gets a little bit bigger and bigger, it starts now, okay, I can see big people are walking. They're moving. Wow. So that's the second step in learning. Now the little baby realizes, they become consciously aware that I am incompetent in this ability to walk, right, or talk. So now the child goes, okay, so that's the second step. Conscious, competent. I don't know how to do this thing called walking. Now you're aware. Conscious, incompetent. I don't know how to do this thing called walking. And the third step in actually now moving on the ladder of learning is now what we call conscious competence. So the previous one was conscious incompetence, where the child now suddenly realizes, I don't know how to walk, I don't know how to talk, because I can see big people doing this. Now the third level kicks in, the child says, okay, now I'm going to walk, I'm going to talk, I'm going to do what these big people are doing. So what the child does, consciously now the child has to, you know, crawl, hold the table, stand. Now the child wants to do what big people do, walk. So the child has to concentrate and say, right, put right leg, okay, next leg, left leg, third leg, and boom, the child falls. The child will fall 100 times and the child will wake up 101 times. Each time fall, they keep waking up because they want to learn the skill of walking. So they want to become competent. So this is that third stage or the third step in the learning where now you become consciously competent. You have to tell yourself, right, take one step, take next step, right? Then after a while, you grow up. By the time the child comes to like around about a year and a half or sometimes 2 years, now the child knows how to walk. The child doesn't have to tell itself, put right leg, put left leg, down. He just runs. You know, you say, hey, come here. He just runs and he moves. So now we got what's called conscious competence. Now the child has the knowledge that requires a conscious ability or conscious effort. That's the third step in the learning, right? In the steps of learning. The fourth step on this learning is what I call, or what's called, unconscious competence. Unconscious competence means, without even thinking, you are doing it. Like, for example, right now, you're breathing in, right? You're not telling yourself, breathe in, breathe out. You're not telling your eyes, blink, blink, blink. No, it's doing it on a subconscious level. So that's called unconscious competence. That's what I was talking about. When you tell the child, hey, come here, the child just runs. You know, it's like even when driving, when you're learning how to drive, you have to consciously, you know, push the clutch in, change the gear, accelerate. That's conscious competence, level three. Level four is now, when you're driving, suddenly you're thinking about something, you get lost in thought, and suddenly you realize, hey, I'm at my destination already. What happened? How did you get there? You didn't, you know, it was all unconscious competence. The subconscious mind knew what it's doing, and it brought you. It knew you needed to change gears. It knew that you needed to breathe, blink eyes. It did all of that, but once you lost its thought. And then you have the fifth level. The highest level of learning is called reflective mastery. reflective mastery is now I think about how I did this and how can I improve on it? How can I master it? Okay, that's called reflective mastery. Now the child, we look at the child and say, let's see how you are walking, right? And okay, you know what? You're walking, your feet are pointed outward. It's going to take you longer. You're going to, you know, have this and this. You know what you need to do? Try now to now, let's 1 inch or 2-3 centimeters, let's make your feet straighter. That's a reflective mastery because sometimes 1 millimeter, you know, people that play sport, and I use this example, golf. If you hit, you know, the ball 1 centimeter up, it's going in a completely different direction. You know? So in the same way, we need to reflect and master what we're doing. So reflection is a very, very important skill to actually now inculcate in our daily life. Every single night, when you sit, you know, when you get into bed to sleep, take 5 to 10 minutes to reflect on the day and all the things I did. This is what I was speaking about, the level of awareness. Remember, we're talking about ability to learn is based on 4 things. Number 1 was the purity of your intention. Number 2, the focus, concentration, and attention of your will. And then I was speaking about now your level of awareness, metacognition. Okay? So we need to bring this into practice and every night take out that time, reflect. How did my day go? What did I do? What could I have done better? You know, how can I improve? And that's called metacognition, being understanding and being aware of what you know and what you don't know. The fourth very important quality, or the important thing for your ability to learn is quality of character. Remember, we are forces for good, and we want to use what we learn for good. So that's very important in terms of your quality of character. Now, when we talk about learning, listeners, I want you to understand we're living in an age of information. You know, we can learn anything at the touch of a button. Now, I believe that learning and teaching is basically the currency of the future. It's the most valuable skill. I mentioned this many times, right? When we know how to learn, we can learn anything, whether it's learning to fly a plane, whether it's learning to design a building, whether it's learning schoolwork, whether it's learning to play a sport, to do something, make something, build something. The more we learn, if you look at the word learn, and we cover the letter L, right? We cover the first letter in the word learn, it tells us earn. So this is why it's the currency of the future. When we know how to learn is very, very important. Okay, what are the obstacles and the traps to learning? The biggest obstacles and traps to learning, number 1, is distraction and interruption. Okay? Distraction. What are distractions? These things, they take your mind away from what you need to be paying attention to. Now, what are the 5 big traps? The 5 big traps to concentration, right, to learning, is number 1, you know, I call them the 5 F's, right? They all start with F. But the first one doesn't start with an S, it sounds like an S. That is the phone, okay? The phone is a huge obstacle to learning because it can become a huge distraction when you are not in control of that device, right? If you are in control, then it's fine. You know when to stop. You know what you went there for. But if you're not in control, you went and you just, you know, scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. 1 hour turns into 2 hours, into 3 hours. So we get, you know, caught up in the scrolling and consuming. We become such huge consumers. So the first thing is we need to minimize distractions to maximize focus, right? The second obstacle to learning is friends. Our friends can distract us and disturb us. Sometimes we're at home. Your phone, your friend might want a WhatsApp call you, or maybe in the classroom. Your friend will just, hey, you know what happened today? Let me tell you who came. You know what I learned? They're distracting you, okay? You need to learn how to take control of your focus. Again, just like the device, you need to control what you are paying attention to. If you are not in control, others will control your focus and your attention. So learn to become, learn to be in control of your focus, because if you are not in control, it's an obstacle to your learning. The third air is family, right? Family becomes a huge distraction. We need to minimize the distraction. So you need to let them know beforehand, this is my study time, please do not distract me. And mummies, with all due respect, a lot of mummies make this mistake, common mistake. Girls will know about it. Child will be busy doing some work, homework, assignments, studying for an exam, and the mother will come, telling them, quickly go to the kitchen, turn the stove off, and quickly just give out a cup of, quickly do this. So what we're doing is we're interrupting them. We're disturbing them, okay? So we need to learn how to, and learn it, right? Respect your time. If you can't respect your time, others will not respect your time. So with respect, you say, "Ma, I'm busy studying now. I'm going to have a break just now, and I'll get it done." At first, you might be angry and get upset with you, but two or three times, then they're going to realize, hey, he's very serious about you, Danny. Let me leave you. So number three was family. Number four is Facebook, Fortnite, you know, FIFA, all these online games and social media. There's a time for it. But when it's time to learn, we need to pay attention. We need to focus, concentrate, and pay attention. Very, very important. We need to, again, I'm going to highlight, minimize distractions to maximize your focus. And the last F is food, right? We need to make sure we eat before we learn, not while we're learning. Because when you eat whilst you're learning, it creates stress in the system. It actually creates stress for the brain. So subconscious stress is called tension. So the body becomes tense. Yeah. So that's the obstacle to learning. Another three very big things that I've come across in the last, I'd say, 10 years or so is the, you know, when you're teaching, and a child, or anybody for that matter, says, "I don't agree," or "I disagree." It's an obstacle to learning. You are not open. Once you're disagreeing, you're only keeping it your opinion, your way, your view. There are multiple ways of looking at things. The how you see it is just your way of interpreting that information. So that's also a big trap where you want to disagree, okay? And the second big trap, or the second, you know, obstacle to learning is also when you go, "I know that," or "I knew that." Now, what happens is when you say, "I know that," or "I knew that," the loop, the learning loop in the brain closes up, okay? So we need to always be open to learning new things and new information. And the last big obstacle is what most parents are facing now is these words, "I don't care," right? This generation uses this phrase a lot, and it's a huge obstacle to me when they say, "I don't care." We need to actually, it means there's a piece off where the heart is not in it. So we need to, the heart to the outcome it's going to give them. Short term, you'll know this one, but what will it do for you long term? So your job as a parent is now to connect their heart to the result or the outcome it's going to give them long term. To make them now want to care about developing and improving. Now, you know, we're speaking about learning and teaching. Something just crossed my mind. What is the difference between education and school? What is the difference between education and school? I want to leave you with that question, right? And if anybody can give me an answer, a good answer to this, you will win a prize. You will win a course, the ACE Your Exam course, right? It's a 5-module course. But I want you to answer the question, and this is for everybody, even parents can answer. What is the difference between education and school? You will win a prize. The best answer will win the a seat onto the ACE Your Exam course, which is a 5-module course. Okay, so that's a little bit about learning. We spoke about parenting, how parenting, and learning. And now we're in the final last 5 minutes. I'm going to talk about high performance habits, right? High performance habits, very, very important to have these high performance habits. And basically, even if we don't have them, right, it's something that we can model, right? Very important to model high performance habits. So what are some of the high performance habits that we need to have? The very most important one is clarity. To be crystal clear about what it is that you want, what it is that you want to achieve, what it is that you want to learn. So you need to determine what you need to know. You know, when it comes to clarity, ask yourself, who are you? What do you stand for? What are my core values? This gives you clarity. So clarity is a very, very important habit of high performance, right? Who am I? What are my skills? What are my talents? Get to know yourself on a deeper level and then map out an action plan of how you're going to improve yourself, okay? So when you're crystal clear, now you know what are your strengths, what are your talents, what are your skills. You know all of these things. Now I can take action and improve on it. So clarity is absolutely crucial. So also with clarity, it's about knowing where you want to go, what you want to accomplish. And that brings in the second part of high performance, and that is productivity. We need to actually have productivity. We need to be very productive, right? What I'm finding, a lot of people are extremely busy. They're busy doing things that are not aligned to their goals or what's important to them. But they're very busy, So how can you be so busy doing things that are not taking you towards your destination? You need to know, right? That's why clarity is so important, work hand in hand with this productivity. If you know where you're going and what you want, now I can take action and produce to get to that result. So very important. Number two is about productivity. It's a high performance habit. And this is basically, you'll find what peak performers or high performers, very often, they are very high in their productivity. They know set times, they've got to do this. Like how we go, five times set daily salah, five times set time. They're in control of their time, right? So you need to improve on your productivity. Another very big habit that we need to have in performance is the ability to influence and persuade, people. Whether you are a youngster, whether you are a child, whether you are an adult, we need to learn. Every time you communicate, you generally, most of the time, you're trying to persuade or influence something to do, influence somebody to do something or get something done, right? So we need to actually learn how to enhance the skill of influence and persuasion, which means I need to learn how to communicate better. So persuasion is a very important habit for high performance. Here you are able to now also set boundaries and say, no, I'm busy right now. I'll get this done for you next week. Or I can't do it. Learn to say no. Okay, so those are the three very important high performance habits. And now I'll round up with the 10-step ladder to high performance. The first step on the ladder, the first step of the 10-step ladder is, number one, I need to have regular breaks. Gone are the days when we could sit and work for, 4 or 5 hours in a stretch without being distracted. If you are trained and you practice that, then you can do it. But vast majority of people are untrained. They don't know how to do that. So for every 1 hour of working or studying, I need to have 2 breaks. So that means I study for like 20 minutes and then I have a 10-minute break. And then I study again, I come back and do another 20 minutes and I have another 10-minute break. And it carries on like that. Okay. Now, this means that it's going to give you higher focus. In that 20-minute block, I call it block time. In that 20-minute block, no distractions, a very high focus, no distractions, no disturbances, nothing must come there in the way. I am set for this 20 minutes. I'm only going to be focused and paying attention to what I need to learn. The second step of the ladder is about exercise, right? 3 to 4 times a week, we all have to exercise. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala loves a good, healthy mu'min. So we need to learn how to become physically healthy, right? Very important to actually, go and exercise. You don't have to be going to the gym or anything. You can do this in your home. Whether it's you're doing, some jumping jacks, whether you're doing some sit-ups, whatever exercises, just know that 3 to 4 times a week, I need to be doing at least 20 minutes of exercise, physical exercise. Even if it means you're just walking around the block, taking a swim, in the pool or even at the beach. But do some kind of exercise and become conscious about that exercise, okay? That's the second step in the ladder, is 3 to 4 times a week, I must exercise. The third step on the ladder is 5 and 6. I need to have 5 to 6 little meals in a day, right? The next step on the ladder is 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Make sure you're getting adequate sleep. Last week, we spoke a lot about the sleep thing, right? This generation is in sleep debt, so we need to get adequate sleep. And the last step on the ladder is water. We need to drink enough water. And gone are those days of 8 glasses a day. It now varies from person to person. And for every 30 kilos of body mass, you need to be drinking 1.25 liters of water. Okay, so I've actually reached the cutoff of my time. That's the end of the show. I want to thank you, listeners, for joining me on the Power Hour. Whatever you've learned, remember, the key is speed to implementation. How fast can you take whatever it is you've learned today, even if it's one thing, go and apply it, implement it, put it into practice. Okay, so jazakallah to the engineers as well for helping us in the background and making this possible for the show to go on. In the next session, inshallah, we will discuss more on parenting, learning, and skill development and high performance. With that, jazakallah khair. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.